Radio CSS Media,
your source for family-centered content.
RadioCSS.com.
And now, Audio Theater Central.
Oh, hi there. I'm John Avery Whittaker, but most folks around here call me Whit.
My name is Finian Jones, and you are...
Hello, I'm Dave Arnold, your host for Focus on the Family Radio Theater.
Hey everybody, I'm JD.
And I'm Roy.
And I'm that other guy. We're your hosts for Audio Theater Central.
Andrew, yes. Welcome to episode 33. The other guy would be Andrew.
Yes, that is my name, but some people apparently don't know that.
So welcome to
Audio. To be explained later.
Yes.
Yes, that's a wonderful segue, Andrew. Perfect. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of listener feedback coming up on the show, as well as other things.
Yeah. We're going to just dive right into some family-friendly audio drama, which is, I think, what we do around here.
Yes, exactly. Today, we are talking about Colonial Radio Theater's Prince and the Pauper.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Very classic story. Mark Twain.
Mm-hmm.
Great author. Mm-hmm. One of my favorites, classic authors.
Yes.
We have referenced him prior to this show. If you recall, we talked about Mark Twain's adventures or the misadventures of Tom Sawyer as... interpreted by Lifehouse Theater on the Air.
Mm-hmm.
But today we're going to talk about another one of his books that have been dramatized. So we got a lot to get to today. But I think before we do all of that, we're going to have an update by Newsman Roy.
Yes. There we go. A new title, Newsman Roy. The official AIO podcast recently featured an interview with none other than Alan Young, the voice of Jack Allen. You must hear this interview if you've not heard it yet. More info on the next Focus on the Family Radio Theater production has been released. It will be based on the Chronicles of Narnia author C.S. Lewis and will be titled C.S. Lewis at War. Recording is completed and we have a projected release of fall 2013. Volume 9 of the Jonathan Park series is now in post-production phase. This album is titled Jonathan Park and the Whispering Sphinx. And according to Andrew Riffenberg, one of the writers and actors for the album, it is, quote, very exciting, jam-packed with action, comedy, and intriguing information about history's greatest mysteries, end quote. That's it, the news for this time. I'm Roy, reporting for Audio Theater Central.
Wow, that was a lot of information.
Yes, all at
definitely.
Once.
And I'm finding about this stuff for the first time. Didn't even know.
I'm glad I am so glad my newscast is so informative for
that's
you.
That's right. Yes. Roy Reporter.
Yeah.
Or Reporter Roy.
Yes.
Exactly. News anchor.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Back to you, Roy.
Yeah, exactly.
Kind of sounded like Dan Rather.
Back to you in the studio.
Well, we've got a really fun audio drama to talk about today. We're going to be talking about The Prince and the Pauper, as we stated before, by the Colonial Radio Theater, which has been producing some really great stuff for, I think, about 20 years almost. And we gotten in touch with them, and they provided us with some review copies of some great productions. We'll be talking about them today. And then, of course, throughout upcoming episodes, we'll be taking a look at some of their other productions. So... now, do keep in mind that not every production that Colonial Radio Theater produces is a family-friendly show. So, if you decide to go check out what they have, you know, just be aware of that fact. And but we'll try to keep you up to speed on everything that they have that meets that criteria. So, The Prince and the Pauper was released originally in 2010, and it's approximately 2 hours on two CDs. It's a really great story, and I think we should hear the summary of that. If you haven't read the book, then you this will be new information, but if you have, it'll sound very familiar.
Yes.
Who's doing the summary?
So now, Andrew. Oh. Please give us a summary of The Prince and the Pauper.
Oh, well, see, sometimes I don't pay attention, so I think maybe we should come up with some music to tell me that the summary is about to happen. Kind of draw me back into the show.
Oh, maybe we should.
Not really. I always pay attention. Okay. The summary of The Prince and the Pauper is as follows. The classic tale from Mark Twain retold in a radio-dramatized version. The Prince and the Pauper revolves around two boys in 1547 England, Tom Canty, the Pauper, and Edward II, son of King Henry VIII, discover their incredible likeness and decide to swap clothes. What occurs after this is anything but what they would have expected. Edward is mistaken for a pauper and kicked to the streets, while Tom is seen as the Prince Edward. Both must overcome their social differences, with the real prince living as a pauper and the pauper as a prince. Will they be able to change places back before the wrong boy is crowned king?
Thank you, Andrew the Announcer Reader.
Summary Reader.
That doesn't rhyme with your name, though. So.
Oh, Andrew the Announcer
Andrew
Reader.
The Announcer.
Gotcha.
Gotta have that alliteration there.
Yes.
Anyway, sorry. I digress.
So, right from the get-go, what I really liked about this is that the opening lines are almost a direct quotation from the book, as in the intro to the opening scene as well, before they actually bring in some of the actors. And then throughout the drama, the narration is, you know, taken directly from the source text, which I really, really like. Go ahead.
I just had a brilliant idea.
Okay.
Don't we have an audio clip of that opening piece there that we can play for our listeners so they know of what we are speaking?
That's a very good idea.
Yeah.
Aren't you glad that JD thought of it?
It's a good thing I have somebody here to keep me in line.
In the ancient city of London, on a certain day in the second quarter of the 16th century, a boy was born to a poor family of the name of Canty, who didn't want him. On the same day, another English child was born to a rich family of the name of Tudor, who did want him. All England wanted him, too. And there was no talk in the whole land but of the new baby, Edward Tudor, Prince of Wales, who lay lapped in silks and satins, unconscious of all this fuss. But there was no talk about the other baby, Tom Canty, lapped in his poor rags, except among the family of paupers he'd just come to trouble with his presence. But let's skip a number of years. Say, 16 years or so?
Spare a coin for the poor orphan boy. Spare a coin for the poor orphan boy.
One January day, on his usual begging tour, Tom Canty tramped despondently up and down the region round about Mincing Lane, hour after hour, barefooted and cold, looking in the cookshop windows and longing for the dreadful pork pies and other deadly inventions displayed there. For to him, these were dainties fit for the angels. By and by, he found himself outside the walls of London, discovering Charing Village, and then idling past the great cardinal's stately palace toward a far more mighty and majestic palace beyond, Westminster.
A king's palace. It's just as I always dreamed.
Tom stared in glad wonder at the vast pile of masonry, the wide-spreading wings, the frowning bastions and turrets, the huge stone gateway with its gilded bars and its magnificent array of colossal granite lions and other signs and symbols of English royalty. Was the desire of his soul to be satisfied? Might he not hope?
And that is a weird way for that little segment to end, but that's all that it shares on the website.
Yes. Would you like to hear more?
Very simple.
Yes.
Just go to their website.
Exactly.
Buy the audio drama.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It'd be very easy for you to hear the rest of it.
But the whole drama, that right in that, you know, that's the first few scenes there. There is a lot of narration, but that does not continue throughout the production. So don't let that scare you away if that kind of annoys you. Because sometimes when there's a production that has a lot of narration, it kind of takes away from actual acting scenes. But that's not the case here. So
right.
Wanted to make sure to point that out.
Could get boring with all that narration and dragging on. And all
this was merely an introduction.
Yes.
Right. Just setting the stage here. And much of the dialogue throughout this thing is actually taken directly from the book, too. Because I did actually look up the book, and I was reading through it, following through as the drama was playing. Of course, you know, they do trim out a few scenes here and there, and they consolidate some things. But a lot of the dialogue is taken almost word for word from the source text, which I don't... You know, I know that a lot of times when somebody's adapting another work for audio, they do change a lot. And I've never understood why they feel like that's necessary to change so much. And I do like it whenever I see a production that is very true to the source.
Mm-hmm. Yes. We actually saw that with the last Mark Twain book that we talked about.
Very good point. Yeah.
Made into an audio drama. They changed quite a bit to shorten it up.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
They managed to... hit all of the really important things in 2 hours, so it was really good.
Now, one thing that did seem a little odd to me was some of the outdoor scenes. It seems like the sound designers were having a little bit of trouble with the outdoor ambience. Mm. I mean, it still sounded too closed in.
The voices,
yeah. Yes.
I noticed this as well, because it seems like, yeah. Sorry, I mean to jump on.
No, that's fine.
Like, it seems like when they're talking, it still sounds like they're in a room, basically, right. Is what it sounds like.
You can hear a little bit of reverberation from the walls.
Exactly, yeah. Yes. When I was listening to this, I heard the same exact thing. I was like, oh, that's interesting. And I think that has to do with, like, I think they affect that on the voice, too. Maybe they drop a little bit out of the voice, like maybe on the EQ or something. Seems like what it happens sometimes. Usually when they bring characters outside in an audio drama, it seems like they change, like, maybe drop the voice, the bass down or something. I don't know exactly what they do, mm-hmm. but I did notice that as well, as the... It did. I could still hear that room reverberation, which kind of was like, wait, are they?
And in some scenes, it was more noticeable than others.
Exactly.
And sometimes I hesitate to point out things like this just mm-hmm. because I think that most people wouldn't even notice it.
True.
And I, you know, whatever. For what it's worth, I did notice that.
Yeah.
But I don't think it was a huge detraction from the show at all.
Not at all. No. And as far as, like, sound design and sound effects go, I think it's interesting how Colonial does their... I mean, we've listened to a few of their stories, and they don't have, like, a ton of sound effects. They're kind of, you know, minimalistic on their sound effects in a few ways, but it still sounds great. Mm-hmm. I mean, for what they do, I mean, they tell the story perfectly, I think.
Yeah, and while we're on the whole sound aspect, the music, I thought was really, really good, too.
Exactly.
Definitely.
I was going to...
Very... period appropriate and everything. It was really good.
Right. I was going to bring that up as well. The music sounds awesome.
Yeah, so we have music by Dennis Cordell and Jeffrey Gage, and some of the orchestration was done by Colby Baker, which, you know, a lot of these people that are involved in CRT, we're not familiar with, I mean, because we're kind of used to the same crowd that works on the other ones that we focus on a lot, but
right. These
are new names to us, but they do a really, really good job. A lot of the characters are... really, really developed. I really liked how some of the characters, they have a voice, and or I don't know if it's their actual, you know, their real voice, but the voice that they chose to use for that character fit like the personality of the character. Did you guys catch that?
Definitely.
Right, exactly. Like with Tom Canty's father and whatnot, I mean, or whatever, so-called. Yeah, his father. But and the mother, too. I think that was a perfect...
Yeah.
That scene was brutal.
Yes, that it was. Reminded me of Oliver Twist.
Yes. Yeah. I actually had that in my notes. There was a lot of things about this that reminded me of the setting, you know, of the backdrop of London, you know, a lot of similarities.
But it's interesting that the two stories are set like 300 years apart.
Hmm. And... There wasn't a whole lot of change in the way things were portrayed as far as the way the poor were treated or the way they lived. And
right.
We'll get to a specific scene in a little bit that really, really reminded me of it. But Speaking of Mr. Canty, that actor was really good. I thought he did a fantastic job with that part.
Agreed.
One scene that I really liked was when, after Tom and Edward had switched and Edward had left, and the Lord Hertford and Lord St. John,
mm-hmm. yes,
had come in, and they were talking with Tom, although they think it's Edward, and he said something about going, after they had finished their talk, he said something about going and sleeping in some corner, and Lord Hertford's like, some corner?
Yeah.
Like, totally surprised at what he was saying.
And it's funny because both of them are dealing with everyone thinking that they're crazy.
Right.
But for two different reasons.
Yeah.
Totally. One, because the kid who's dressed in rags and everything is telling everybody that he's the king. And then the other one, because this guy that's dressed in all the finery and looks just like the king is just a pauper. And he's trying to tell everybody that, but they don't believe him.
Right.
And for that very reason, they didn't believe that he was an imposter. Because as Lord Hertford points out to Lord St. John, he says, you know, if he were not the prince, why would he be protesting against it, saying that he wasn't? You know, if there was somebody who was filling his role, you would think they would be trying to convince
exactly
us that he really was the king exactly. or the prince.
Right. And speaking of, like, those two actors, I don't know if it came across to you like this, but sometimes it seemed like to me that I could hear, like, they were reading almost like the script. I don't know if that came across to you in any scenes, but like a few scenes, I can't remember one specifically, but a few times, because of the old English or whatnot, it seemed like they're just reading it instead of just act, you know, but it was just
it's a little less natural way of speaking, perhaps, mm-hmm. and exactly. so they did have to follow yeah. the lines a little more closely maybe, than yeah. trying to...
Exactly.
I didn't catch that, but that could be...
Yeah. I can't remember the scene exactly, but it seemed like...
Yeah, I think so, too, because that was one of the things I noticed was the old English was kind of hard to get used to at first, just in general, because we're not used to hearing it as well as they're not used to speaking it or whatever. But mm-hmm.
Or they could be used to
pretty interesting.
Maybe good speaking, I'm not used to hearing it. Could be that.
That's possible, too. Yeah. I'm glad they used it that way, because it wouldn't have sounded right any other way, but it was a little hard at first to... hear it. Until you got used to it, then it was good.
Another scene that really stood out to me was the death scene with
the king.
Henry VIII. Mm. And, you know, here he is laying there dying, and his advisors are taking like 5 sentences to say one thing. You know,
yeah.
they're still using that long, flowery type of speech because they're in the presence of the king, and it's like,
right.
dude, he's dying, just spit it out.
Exactly.
Exactly.
And then, of course, enters Miles... Miles Hinden, was it?
Or yes.
Herndon? Hinden?
Hinden.
Yes.
Which was played really well
yeah.
by Jerry Robbins, who is kind of the head honcho over at CRT.
And the star.
Yeah. And I love that line that he had because Edward, who looks like a pauper, everybody thinks he's Tom Canty. And here he is knighting Miles
yeah.
as he's royalty, you know. And
Miles is just humoring him because he likes the kid.
Yeah.
And then, like, when the prince realizes that his father dies and he's the king now, like, he's like, what? Dress me. And he, like, starts treating him, like, all like a servant. And stuff. It's hilarious. He's like, yes, my lord. And
yeah. so but funny. I love that line right after he knights him and Miles says, I have become a knight of the kingdom of dreams and shadows.
And then he requests for his service to the king that he really doesn't know he's giving, but the king does. He requests that he may be allowed, him and his heirs should always be allowed to sit in the presence of the king.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't know if he gets that or not because we won't ruin the ending.
Exactly.
Don't want to tell you what happens.
If you don't. Which, again, this is a classic tale that a lot of people already know. And I mean, I've read the book
right.
years ago,
mm-hmm.
Probably a couple of times, if I remember correctly. And I still really, really enjoyed this. In fact, I listened to it through twice, you know, so it's a really good dramatization of this story. And one thing that I really liked is how Tom, he judges people fairly.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the part that really, really reminded me of Oliver Twist. So here he is acting as the king, and he's judging this, quote, evidence against these criminals. They were supposed criminals that
right.
the legal system of the day had found guilty with this scant amount of evidence. Yeah, that
very
was,
bogus.
Yeah, and it totally reminded me of that scene in Oliver Twist where they're bringing the guy, what was his name? I forgot now, but the guy who had walked away from the thing with the book,
right.
not realizing he had taken the book.
Right.
Mr. Brownlow.
Yes.
Right.
I remember this. Okay.
And then that whole scene there in front of the magistrate or whoever he was, and how, I mean, they just did not trust the poor.
Like, right.
anything that they said, if somebody else who was higher status said something different, then we are going to accept that instead, yeah. you know?
Yeah. I really like those scenes too, where he's judging those and he just totally defies tradition and just starts like,
but he does it logically too.
Right,
it's
exactly.
obvious that the priest who taught him or whatever did a good job, because he, you know, he does it with logic, and you know what you're saying doesn't make any sense because A, B, and C, and if this, then that, and whatever, and he's just making hash out of what they're saying.
Yeah,
out of their cases, which are totally sketch anyway. So
yeah.
it's like.
And the priest had a really good name, too, didn't he?
He did. That's right. Father Andrew.
Father Andrew.
Oh, I thought it was Father that other guy.
Hey.
Possibly.
Are you a Father Andrew?
No.
So another thing that really stood out, and this, again, is dealing with the whole perception of that time period, is how repulsive the idea of learning and education and reading was to Tom Canty's father. And it was just like he hated that fact that priest had been teaching his son, you know.
Right. Hated it so much that he exacted revenge on the priest.
Mm-hmm.
Very unpleasantness. Very much unpleasantness.
And another thing that I thought was kind of funny, and there were a few bits throughout this that were kind of humorous. I mean, you can't help but find humor in the way, I mean, you know that Edward really is the king,
mm-hmm.
but even then, you still find it humorous the way he is acting, because everybody else doesn't know that. And
exactly.
So, you know, but some of the low lives that Tom Canty's father is hanging out with, and they start making fun of Edward, and he's like, I think a better name would be Fufu the First.
Yeah.
I love that.
And the funny thing is it doesn't matter what kind of situation he's in. I mean, these people could have killed this kid easily.
Mm-hmm.
They really were at that point more powerful than he was, because he was young and they were old and they could have done whatever they wanted with him. But he still treated them like they were subjects, and he still acted like the king, even though he could have been killed at any moment.
Yeah.
Which is really interesting, because he'd been taught that his entire life. So
yeah,
he just expected everybody to know.
And then on the other hand, we have Tom Canty, you know, doing just the opposite and playing king.
Uh-huh.
And being a good one,
exactly.
which is funny.
It's just real funny, yeah. And then once Edward hears that Tom Canty is, like, judging and all this stuff, you can hear, like, he's like, what?
He's taking my place.
Exactly. And so you kind of like, well, when they finally meet, what is the attitude going to be toward each other, you know?
Right.
Right.
Will the king have this kid executed?
Will Tom Canty, like, in his mind, you know, like, well, I'm the king now, and, you know, he's never going to come back, you know, is this, or will, if he ever does show up, will he, you know, will he acknowledge that he is the, that Edward is the right king? Or will Edward, when he sees Tom Canty, be, you know, horribly mad and all this stuff? Or,
which is really cool, because
they build that up.
They go to the nature of both of the boys and the fact that they really are both just as noble.
Hmm.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
Because of the way that Tom just relinquishes what he's had.
Right.
And the king takes it back, but still extends mercy.
Mm-hmm.
And again, with this one, it's kind of hard to separate the Mark Twain work from the dramatization, because it is so true to the book. I mean, they really did do a faithful adaptation, which it's a good testament to the writers that they have over there. I believe it was M.J. Eliot who handled the adaptation for this. But Hugh Hendon, who we find out is Miles' brother, was played by an actor named Jeremy Benson. And I think that guy nailed that part.
Definitely.
That was great.
Definitely. He did a very good job. And then that whole, you know, sort of secondary plot that was going on with Miles. It's pretty cool.
Yes.
So, of course, that really goes back to Mark Twain and more than the audio drama, but still it has to do with the story. So,
and one of the best lines in the whole thing, at least to me, is towards the end. They're at the coronation, and all of a sudden this boy walks up and says, "I believe you're on my throne, Tom." I loved that. Any other final observations from this drama?
I don't think so.
I think we covered it pretty well.
It was very good.
Yeah, from acting to sound design to the music to the way they kept it close to the book.
Yeah.
I think they did a very very good job on dramatizing this.
We highly recommend this one. I do just have to briefly let you know that there is one instance where they do use some mild language that, you know, you might not want to, if you want to listen to it, parents, before you let your kids listen to it, or maybe just, you know, pass this one by altogether if you don't want to deal with that. But just wanted to let you know that that is in there. But again, it's really well done. I would say to the CRT people, you know, I don't know why they had to put that in there, because I didn't find it in the original work, so why add that in there? But, you know, it's really well done, and if you want to check it out, there's links in the show notes. You can get it on Amazon, on Christian Book Distributors, or on iTunes. We'll let you know that right now I believe it is only $8 on, as of the time of this recording, only $8 on Christian Book Distributors. So it's well worth it, I think. It's a two-hour drama, great for a road trip. So check that out.
Please leave your message after the tone.
Hi, Audio Theater Central.
Hey, guys, this is Austin Peachy.
Hello, JD, Roy, and Andrew. My name is Victoria.
Now, yesterday, I received a letter from a big fan.
No time to chat. I've got an email list.
Another package for me today.
No, it's actually just your mail.
I love jumping into the feedback from the listeners.
Feedback. Thank you. And we have a lot of mail today from our feedback. From our listeners. Let's see if I can start talking here.
Can you throw a few more F's in there, Roy? Feedback from our followers.
Ooh.
Feedback from our faithful followers.
There you go. From our faithful future followers. But that wouldn't be possible since they wouldn't know about us yet.
Yeah.
All right.
Loyal listeners.
Lovable loyal listeners.
Let's start off. A comment from Sea Guy.
Go ahead.
Oh, okay. I think this is very interesting right here, how he did this. He switched it up. Like I think we talked about this. But it's hello. No, it says hey. JD, Andrew, and Roy. When I heard your last interview with John Fornoff and your discussion about G.A. Henty, I got really excited. I actually own a collection of 20 of his best books and 6 audiobooks from Great Hall Productions. I'm a fan of his books, and now I cannot wait for The Extraordinary Adventures of G.A. Henty! I am so happy that his books will be dramatized. I plan on reading Under Drake's Flag as soon as school gets out for obvious reasons. Now for a bit of info, G.A. Henty is a 18th century writer and has been called the king of storytellers for boys. He wrote 99 books, 50 short stories, and wrote stories for magazines. Almost all of his books are historical fiction, ranging from ancient Egypt to the ancient Civil War. Many people...
To the what?
To the American... Ancient American Civil War. To the American Civil War. Many people criticize his books because they were too Christian. So there you have it, a brief introduction to G.A. Henty. Thank you for reading this, ATC, and keep up the great work.
And I would say anything criticized as being too Christian is going to be great.
So I can't wait to hear that info. sea guy. And I remember last time we kind of guessed as to what the C stood for, but I don't remember what we decided on. So
I can't remember either.
You got that one, Andrew?
Sure. We have a text from Josiah. And it says, "Dear ATC, I just wanted to send you a quick note to say that I really enjoy y'all's show and for you to keep up the great work. May God richly bless you as you proclaim godly shows, which is a rarity these days. God bless. Josiah Dugar." Dugar.
Duggar.
Yes, I think so. Duggar.
Duggar.
Well, thank you very much, Josiah, and thank you for the feedback.
Yeah.
We appreciate when people let us know that, you know, they're enjoying the shows, because that's why we do it.
Yeah. Appreciate the text using our nice land, our nice phone number feature.
Exactly.
Yes. You send a text to a landline.
Yes.
Come on, Roy.
Also wanted to say a quick thank you to a listener, Becca, who actually contacted the Brinkman Adventures folks, Ian Boltman, over there that we talked about in our previous episode. And she just wanted to send him a note and let him know that she found out about their series from us. So I wanted to say thank you to Becca for doing that. And I don't know why we have never mentioned this before, but yeah, if you hear about a particular production or series from ATC, that would be awesome if you would let the producers of that series or show know that you found out about them from us.
Yeah.
So thank you very much, Becca, for doing that. And anybody else, if you ever contact Lamplighter or AIO or anybody else, let them know that you heard about the production from us. So
yeah.
Of course, everybody knows about AIO. They probably didn't hear about it from us. But anything else, Lifehouse.
I just heard about Odyssey for the first time. From the ATC guys.
Exactly.
The guys at ATC, as we are commonly called, seems like. The guys at ATC.
Yeah. So. And we have a few iTunes reviews that we wanted to mention. We haven't done this in a while.
Represent.
Yeah, so.
Go iTunes. 5-star ratings. How about that?
Those are beautiful.
Aren't they? Yeah. Thank you, guys. We really appreciate your iTunes reviews. Helps us move up in the ratings and whatnot in podcast realm of iTunes.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
By the way, we are in the top. If you search for audio drama or audio theater in the either the U.S. store or the U.K. store, and I think also in the Canada iTunes store, we're in the top five, I think, usually in the results. So that's cool.
Yes. Thank you to our listeners for your help. Speaking of one of those listeners.
Yeah, go ahead, Roy.
We got a review from my, how would you pronounce
this? I have no idea how you say that one, but
I think it's Black and White'em.
Something like that.
It would be, yeah. But anyways, so fun. 2 exclamation marks. Great host, good audio quality, awesome content. Bam. Like, bam. I love that. I
know.
Like, bam. Stellar podcast. Well, thank you.
Yes, thank you, whoever you are, for that 5-star rating and review.
Yes.
And we have one from Aaron, another 5-star.
Mm-hmm.
It says, "I do not know what I would do if I did not have this show." That makes me feel very good.
How about that?
Thanks, wow. JD and Roy and that other guy.
There it is. I've been relegated to that other guy. That's awesome.
JD, Roy, and Andrew.
Thank you, unnamed person who left a review on iTunes.
Yeah,
that's
okay.
That's pretty funny. That's okay.
Yeah.
Well, other guy, I think we have one more review from iTunes. Can you read that one?
Sure. This is from,
Go, I think. Or is it
goo?
Goo?
Goo Canada Goo.
No, Go Canada.
Go. Oh, okay. Now I get it.
It could be either one. I don't know.
Yeah.
Go Canada Go. 5-star rating from 31113 referencing our review of Grand Design, which is AIO album number 56. Your latest podcast was so funny and awesome. Love AIO. Love your review. Listening from Ontario, Canada.
Very cool.
That is awesome.
Gotta love it.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Love a Canadian.
GCG.
Listeners.
We'll just call it that.
There you go.
That's a good one.
That works. That works.
And if you would like to contact us, leave us a review in iTunes. You don't need to contact us to do that, but just hop in there and leave us a review or a rating.
Mm-hmm.
But if you'd like to contact us, there's many ways you can do that. Send us an email or a text. Always comment on the show notes, which are at audiotheatercentral.com. For this episode, it's audiotheatercentral.com/33.
Yep. Scroll down to the bottom. Click leave a comment. Just type a few words and a few wordage of greatness, leaving good replyage and stuff. Mm-hmm. Or you can email us, like JD said, feedback@audiotheatercentral.com. We have a phone number that you can text to, as we mentioned. Some of our feedback listeners, people, loyal, future fans did. And that number is 623. Okay, am I just going to do this all by myself here?
Yeah, go for it.
Sure, why not?
623-688-2770.
And you were on a roll. I didn't want to
exactly.
interrupt.
Why interrupt a good thing that's going on?
Yeah, so contact us. So if you have any feelings or thoughts on The Prince and the Pauper, what do you think about it if you've heard it? Even if you've just read the book.
Exactly.
You know? Hit us up. Let us know what you think.
Tell us if you hated it. Tell us if you didn't. Yeah. Tell us if you loved it. Tell us if you didn't.
Yeah, and if you heard Colonial Radio Theater's dramatization of this already, let us know what you thought of it, too. We'd love to hear your thoughts.
Exactly. I think that does it. That'll wrap it up. We'll see you next time, everybody. Thanks for listening.
Adios.
Audio Theater Central is a production of Radio CSS Media. RadioCSS.com.
You just had to get the last word, didn't you, Andrew?
Announcer Andrew, adios.
Announcer Andrew, adios, and other guy.
That other guy, now we have reporting live, the other guy, announcer Andrew, adios.
That's okay, we love all of our listeners.
Yes.